Brent, you're muted.
Thank you, whoever helped me with that. Thanks. Welcome, everyone, for today's Fridays from the State House call. I want to start by thanking our sponsor, Cornerstone Government Affairs. They lobby for us at the Iowa State Capitol and are helping bring this call to everyone. So we have a couple of things to cover today. However, this should be a fairly brief call. Happy to take as many questions as you like. The what we're going to cover today is a preview of next week's action on the quality assurance and assessment fee. We have several policy bills that have material impact on the sector that we want to update you all on. We're also going to talk about the certificate of need and change of ownership process and some pending legislation there. And then I want to talk a little bit about the federal staffing mandate before we wrap up. So with that, I'm going to hand this right over to Brandon. Brandon Hagen is on to give us a policy update. Brandon.
Yeah, thanks, Brent. So there's just a few bills right now that are still active that we're tracking prior to first funnel, which is next week. And so one of them being House File 235. This is a bill relating to the Medicaid reimbursement for services for individuals who meet nursing home level of care, but are also required to be registered as sex offenders. And this was a bill with Representative Fry that he's been working on trying to find placement for many of those individuals. And it kind of lines up with much of the work that we've been getting outreach on from hospitals or the department or whatever, because there's seems to have been an influx recently of sex offenders needing placement in long-term care. And knowing that many of you are having inabilities to care for those folks. And so this is trying to create a process to have an additional funding to care for some of those individuals, whether that's more than likely in a standalone facility or a standalone unit, separate from the rest of the population, or unlikely, but I guess intermixed, I guess could be the other solution, but unlikely. Another bill that we're tracking is Senate File 327, House File 357. And so this is our healthcare employment agency kind of cleanup bill, where there's been a lot of exceptions within that bill. And so this is trying to clean up some of the definitions within there to make it more clear, so that way we're not having to exclude a whole bunch of different entities. That bill has been placed on the House debate calendar and is waiting for debate. It passed the full Senate HHS committee and is waiting to be placed on the debate calendar for the Senate too. So that one is still moving. And then the last one is Senate Study Bill 1167, House Study Bill 177. This is an act relating to the Medicaid program, including third-party recovery, which isn't as applicable to us, but another one is taxation of Medicaid managed care organization premiums. And I think the big thing about this is other insurance plans have been paying premiums on or taxes on their premiums. Medicaid managed care organizations had not. And so what this does is this creates a taxation for those groups, with the funds from the tax being returned to the Department of Health and Human Services for use in the medical assistance program. And likely, or I guess the expectation would be that those funds would be used to cover shortfalls for all their providers that are providing Medicaid services. But the DHS would have kind of the reins of choosing when or where that goes because of the tax being directed back to them specifically. So those are kind of the ones that we're monitoring right now. I'll flip over into QAF now, if that's what you're thinking, Brent. Yep. Okay. And so we actually had a conversation yesterday with the Department of Human Services, the nursing facility provider rate setting team, pretty much. To get some additional details. Obviously, the informational letter is lacking some of those details, and so we were able to get some more from them. I'm going to characterize these as estimates for you all. So we will also just, obviously, this will not be the only time that you're hearing about this. DHHS is having a webinar on Tuesday at 10, which we've sent out to members through our bulletin. Identify or notifying you of that. So DHHS has a call on this program, the quality assurance assessment fee, on Tuesday at 10. We will be having our call on Tuesday at 11, immediately following that DHHS presentation. And so we will definitely be covering this in detail with additional paper documents too. So needless to say, you're going to be hearing about this multiple times. This won't be the only time that you hear about it. But as far as the updates, there's been oftentimes questions about the timeline and how it's all going to shake out. We were notified yesterday that they've talked to CMS about the state plan amendment, which has not been submitted yet, but they've talked to CMS and notified them that they're going to need quick turnaround on the state plan amendment when it's submitted. And they seemed agreeable to that. I would expect a public and tribal notice to come out probably today. They are required to have that out for 30 days before they can submit a state plan amendment. And so if that comes out today, the 30 days are going to be up right around March 26th or 25th, which is a weekend. So the 27th is likely the day that that state plan amendment would be submitted to CMS. And if you'll recall, I think it was either last year or the last time we had funding, part of that legislation was that it gave the department the authority to issue rate notices prior to CMS approval. And so they have, they're going to flex that capability with QAF as well, they've indicated. And so once the state plan amendment is submitted to CMS and is pending with them, they are able to then turn around rate notices to providers and managed care organizations. And so the expectation is that sometime in that week of March 27th, they will be able to turn around those rate notices and send them out to providers and to the managed care organizations for implementation into their rate systems. MCOs by contract have 30 days to implement new rate notices. And so if they are submitted to the MCOs that last week of March, they would have likely until the end of April to get those put into their systems, which is okay for most everyone because you're not submitting your April claims until the first week of May. And so it should, I guess this is all saying that we are on schedule and feeling on schedule with this all flowing properly for there not to be any issues with your bill, your processing of claims. So to get into the details of the program, I'm going to characterize again, like I said, these as estimates, but we would expect that the increased non-waiver tax, which was previously $12.75, will now be $33.90. We would expect that the waiver rate, which was previously, I think, $2.50, will now be $6.51. The add-on, previously $15, is now $37. And so that is the tax piece. So that's what how those rates are going to be changing. So in the past, you would have gotten a your return. So you have your base rate, you get your return fee, and then you get your add-on. So those return fees and add-ons are increasing significantly with the new tax. The second part of this is the addition to the rate or to the base rate. And we've talked last call about what that means. As part of the update from DHS yesterday, the expectation is that rate increase will be around 11.5%. And so that is an increase from when we talked last. So positive movement on that base rate increase, which will just be baked in to your bases going forward. And so I guess hearing all that, obviously know that it's not going to be a standard 11.8% for every provider. This does not factor in any case mix changes that may occur for your entity. And so if you've had a case mix decrease over the last quarter, it's possible that you may not receive that full 11.8% because case mix is obviously still a factor within this. But all in all, really good news. The program is flowing as we would expect it to, and is all on track for an April 1st implementation date for our skilled nursing providers. So that's a major part of our funding ask, our funding pieces. The second piece is obviously SNF rebasing, which is going to be underway here. We've been having the conversations, but it will be really getting in full swing here after first funnel, which will be in a couple weeks, and we'll start having those conversations again with providers. I think Brent mentioned it last week. We would expect, because of the quality assurance assessment fee program, that the rebase ask, which was previously around $60 million, will be able to be reduced because of that base rate increase that we get. So we would expect that amount to be around $37 million remaining, is what our ask will be. So that will be really important, especially when we're having Day on the Hill on March 8th, as we're advocating for some of those funding requests. As far as our home health providers go, we are in the talks and having the conversations around the state appropriation of $3.2 million to get all of our home health rates up to 100%. Last year, you may remember a $1.77 million appropriation that went specifically to rural home health. We've asked the department to let us know an amount of what would get everybody up to 100% of LUPA rates without any budgetary reducers, and that is $3.2 million total. And so we'll be advocating for that for our home health members to get them caught up too. And then lastly, many home health and our assisted living members are providers of Medicaid through the Elderly Waiver Program. And so as you will recall, 3.55% and 4.25% rate increases over the last several years, as the department is making pushes towards home and community-based services, we are supporting that work and requesting that they continue to increase those service rates at the same clips as what they have been over the past two sessions, and basically just continuing their work to improve that service line for our Medicaid elderly waiver group. So I'll pause there because that was a lot of information. I know that I spit out a bunch of numbers and all that. So Brent, if you have anything you want to add there, or let me know.
I don't have anything to add to that right now, Brandon, but it's smart to pause. And we do have a couple of other items we want to cover, but let's go ahead and open this up to any questions that anyone has pertaining to the appropriations and quality assurance status.
This is Diane. I got a question. So is it 11.5 or 11.8% for the increase in the rate April 1st?
11.8.
Thank you.
We will be, so Brandon alluded to the department's webinar on this on Tuesday at 10 o'clock Central Time. We have moved our SNF provider call to immediately follow that. And following that call, the SNF provider call, we will be issuing guidance out to the membership on quality assurance, a lot of which you just heard. We're also working on a new calculator to assist providers in calculating an estimate of impact on this as well. So there will be some more to come on this next week. But as Brandon said, that's the number, that 11.8% on average is the number that we've been given by the department at this time, which we are pleased is higher than we had originally modeled. Other questions?
I guess one thing that I would maybe add is, you know, obviously there is pressure on all payer sources. And as you're evaluating your need to change private pay amounts, Just know that if you are having to give a reason, the reason cannot be that the provider tax in Iowa increased. There has been instances in the past where that has been the stated reason that a provider has increased their private pay rates, and that cannot be the case. That is very bad public policy for us, especially as we are moving into the rebase portion of this. Anything like that that happens that gets back to a legislator or something like that could have serious negative connotations to any future rebase ask.
So yeah, just to put a finer point on that, anything like that would put this entire program at significant risk and certainly imperil any future rebase. So it's incredibly important that providers do not cite the provider tax as a as an input on any kind of private pay rate increase. Just choose another reason. Okay, we will have more. We'll end with another round of Q&A in case anybody wants to think of anything else. I just have maybe two more things, and then Brandon's going to give you a quick rundown of Day on the Hill. Certificate of need. We are expecting legislation calling for a moratorium on the certificate of need process in Iowa. We are working to shape that legislation to have a number of components to it that make this more palatable for the provider community. We're seeking a beginning and an end date to the moratorium, which is not currently scoped in the discussion. We're also suggesting and asking that the bed need formula be reviewed during the period at which the moratorium is in place. And then the moratorium is irrespective of that outcome, the moratorium is lifted at a specified date in the future. A number of other components that we're working to make this particular piece of legislation more palatable to providers. We're also looking at reforms around the change of ownership process and strengthening the hand of the state in reviewing change of ownership requests to ensure that we are not inviting operators that are unqualified or undercapitalized into our market. So there will be more to come on that. I expect there will be movement on that particular piece of legislation next week ahead of the funnel deadline of Friday. Finally, on the federal side, you all, I'm sure, are dialed into ACA, and so I won't repeat a lot about the staffing mandate. We do have a call to action in the field asking for comment letters to be sent to CMS by the end of this month. So that is just about 4 days from now. Thus far, we've had a number of Iowa providers that have sent comment letters. This is the time to send those along. ACA is working to have tens of thousands of comment letters into CMS as they do their work to shape that particular rule before its issuance. And again, the expectation is that the rule will be released with the payment rule, which is typically the end of April, first part of May. So it is upon us. We don't know exactly what is inside there, and I think that there's still an open discussion at CMS and among the provider community, which is good news, meaning that we still have an opportunity to shape this. So if you would, please do respond to that call to action and submit a quick letter to CMS. The portal is really easy to use. I did it myself the other day, and we're certainly not asking for a multi-page comment letter, just a couple of sentences, a couple of paragraphs is what we're looking for. That is what I've got. Brandon, you want to just give a quick preview? We've still got a week or two to go before Day on the Hill, but anything that our folks need to know about that at this point?
Yeah, I just want to say, thanks to everyone who registered. We closed registration actually just today. We are at 117 individuals attending Day on the Hill, which is significantly larger than any Day on the Hill we've ever had. Which is appropriate and is needed, especially as we're trying to significantly close that rebase gap for SNFs, trying to get to full cost coverage for our home health agency members, and then obviously trying to continue to make work and to improve the elderly waiver program for our home health and our assisted living members. And so thanks to everyone who registered. That is, like Brent mentioned, on March 8th. If you signed up for the CEUs, that begins at 10 a.m. We are very happy to have former Speaker of the House, Linda Uppmeyer, will be speaking with the group for a little bit to try, because we have a lot of new faces that are going to be coming, to give some of her takes on how to talk with legislators. Being a former leader within the Iowa legislature, she would have an important perspective on that. So we're happy to have her speaking with the group for that too. We'll be there doing CEUs for a couple hours, have some lunch, get on two completely packed buses, and head down to the Capitol for a couple hours. But we will provide all the information that you'll need in that 2 hour time frame beforehand of what to talk about, maybe what not to talk about, and to make it a really successful afternoon, and hopefully really chip away at some of our legislative priorities for the rest of the session. So I'm really excited about it. I'm glad we have so many people. We're really trying to push that message of keeping LTC local for our members and ensuring that access to care is able to be retained. So.
Thank you, Brandon. That's what we've got for the group. Let's open this up for any final questions and answers before we let you go today. All right, going once, going twice. Okay, everyone have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for joining us today, and we will be back with you same time, same channel on next Friday. Thanks.